feels good to start an episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast being able to declare right from the start that we have all collectively won the trade.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been saying that for a long time.
T-H-A-T-R-A-I-D.
Yeah. And we still have to get to remind people what T-R-A-I-D means.
Yeah, we're still getting those.
We're still getting those. Oh, I don't understand what that means. Yeah, well, sorry, guys.
Maybe you guys should spell check your tweets.
Nope. Maybe you should spell check your face.
Yeah, do that, you jerks.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome in.
Hey.
Episode number 88 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, in which we talk about the Colorado Rockies baseball team, not the hockey team of the 1970s. One episode, we should just do one episode where we break down, like, the 1977 Colorado
Dennis
Rockies
Savard.
Hockey season. Yeah. That would be fantastic. What do you think about Don Cherry? Is he coming back next year?
We promised a Franco-Prussian War talk on the last episode.
Yeah,
and
we never got to that at all.
I feel bad about that.
I know, you know? I do feel kind of bad.
We really do try to keep it for the fans.
Yeah.
It's what the fans want.
We do this for you, the fans. The Franco-Prussian War, by the way, is often referred to as the Franco-German War in certain circles. And it was a conflict
as Franco-American.
Sure.
Which makes baloney.
Why not? Yeah, totally.
Michael Franco. Julio Franco.
I actually almost met Julio Franco a couple weeks ago in Korea. Not even kidding you.
What?
So Julio Franco is the hitting coach for the Lotte Giants in the Korea Baseball Organization.
He's still playing.
No, he probably could. He looks like exactly as ripped as you would imagine Julio Franco would still look. But one of my friends is the pitching coach for that team and is like good friends with Julio Franco. And I didn't even drop his name. I just dropped Julio Franco's name, and I dropped that my friend is friends with him. So I'm not name dropping. I'm not friends with Julio Franco.
Yeah, we know.
Obviously, I wouldn't be able to even understand him and how well he knows hitting. He'd be giving me these little intricacies, and I'd be like, "What? How does that?"
Nope. Huh? Sorry.
But Julio Franco, in case you were wondering what he does, that is what Julio Franco does now. He's still a total star over in Korea. Okay, I'm Tyler Vaughn.
I'm Anthony Masterson. Hi.
Hi. We have a name for this episode.
We do, actually. Josh Altman.
Number 88, Josh Altman.
First named episode since episode number 77.
Wow.
Yeah. Josh Altman wore number 88 in 2012 and 2013 with the Colorado Rockies. Appeared in 88 games in those 2 years with a record of 4-3 and an ERA of just a tick under 6 at 5.99.
Did have
93 punchouts in 94 and 2/3 innings. He was a halfway effective reliever at times. Considering he put up an 8.19 ERA in his first year in 2012 and 27 appearances and dropped that all the way down to 4.33 in 61 appearances in 2013.
Yeah, it really was not that bad in
2013. 3.25 FIP in 2013. Yeah, that's not bad at all.
The Rockies, they made one of their illustrious deals in order to rid themselves of old Jim Altman. Well, he was really part of two deals. They dealt Seth Smith away in order to get Josh Altman and Guillermo Moscoso, who, beyond having a fantastic name, that was at the beginning of 2012, really didn't do much else. A 3-2 record and a 6.12 ERA in 23 appearances for the Rockies was Guillermo Moscoso. So they traded away Seth Smith, who I always loved. Traded him away and got
who's
Josh
still doing
Altman.
Okay.
Yeah, and was still in the major leagues and doing okay as a member of a Mariners team that is still fighting for a playoff spot. This year he is slashing .261, .349, .437. I always liked Seth Smith. He hit a walk off homer in the first Rocky spring training game I ever went to, and so I just like latched on to back when he was like in high A. I was just latched on to Seth Smith because of that.
Yeah, why not?
Did you know he played quarterback at Ole Miss?
Did
no
you
one
know
ever told
he
that
backed
story.
Up one of the Manning brothers?
Did you know that Todd Helton also backed up a Manning brother?
Did you know that I once saw Peyton Manning play football on television?
Did you know that Peyton Manning does commercials now really focused around how he no longer plays football on television?
No, I did not know that.
Also, the Rockies draft a lot of other quarterbacks. Did you know the Rockies once drafted Michael Vick? And that is not a joke. That is actually true.
What about Tim Tebow?
They did not draft Tim Tebow, thankfully. But if they did, they probably would have won the World Series by now. Oh, just kidding. No, he hasn't won anything since he graduated college. Did he even graduate college? I assume he did.
Probably not.
With a degree in BSing. the Rockies at the end of 2013 then traded Josh Altman to the Cleveland Indians for one Drew Stubbs, who was a real legend around these parts. Drew Stubbs, over the course of his illustrious career with your Colorado Rockies, 183 games. He somehow managed to slash .273, .328, .471, which makes zero sense because I remember Drew Stubbs striking out in every single at bat he ever took.
Yeah.
In 2015, he played in 51 games and he struck out 50 times. In 102 at bats, he struck out 50 times. That's like
amazing.
Impossible.
That's amazing.
God's name.
Josh Altman was a sweet vulture in his later career. His last 2 years combined between three teams, he won a combined 11-0 out of the bullpen.
Wow.
Vulture.
Josh Altman. Josh Altman, by the way, after they traded him away to the Indians pretty much sent him directly to Columbus. Like, he didn't see a lot of time at the major league level. The Indians acquired him for the 2014 season. He pitched in 31 games, but I guess compared to the 9,000 he had pitched in for the Rockies the previous two seasons, kind of surprising.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went off to the Yankees. He's still only, what is he now, 32, Josh Altman? And, yeah, he's kicking around. He's in the Pirates organization this year. So there's
body freaking die.
Oh, actually, the Pirates organization, and he played independent ball for the new team in New Britain, the New Britain Bees, the Independent Atlantic League. So anyway, here we are. Welcome in. It's this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And your Colorado Rockies looked pretty good yesterday. Not so much the couple of days before. Before we get to this, by the way, you're a first-time listener to the old PDP, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes and on the Stitcher app, and you can find us at purplerow.com as well, and you can give us a rating and a review and a subscription. What are you, going to the bathroom?
Yeah, dude, I do my entire show from the bathroom. You didn't know that?
You're so disgusting. You're a disgusting human being.
Nah, I don't think
you're
so.
Really, you're a really gross person.
I'm just misunderstood.
Well, I won't disagree with that, because nobody can understand you, because you're so weird. But anyway, you can also buy our shirts, Purple Dinosaur Podcast, .bigcartel.com, from the good folks at Humble Monster. So anyway, yesterday was fun.
Yeah,
Herman
else,
Marquez.
And that series wasn't great, but yeah, the whole point of yesterday is that we can say that we won the trade. We can say it without any kind of reservations whatsoever.
Trade.
Won the trade. If you're wondering which trade in which we are referring, that would be the one in this past offseason where the Rockies sent Corey Dickerson and future Babe Ruth Kevin Padlo to Tampa Bay Rays. Current Babe Ruth. For one, Jake McGee, who still has not checked his Twitter yet or told us anything.
what is with him?
About his date that he went on.
I know! He went on that date 1,000 years ago.
And then the throw-in to the deal was a high-A pitcher named Herman Marquez, who the Rockies were like, okay, well, I guess we'll take him.
Right.
All Marquez went on to do last year was, or I guess this past year, went on to win the Eastern League Pitcher of the Year in Hartford. He went up three levels, made his first major league start yesterday, tossed five innings of one-run ball, and picked up his first major league W along the way. Hashtag pitcher win. So congrats to Herman Marquez.
Yeah. I want to clear up one thing. We have nothing against Kevin Padlo at all.
Nothing whatsoever.
I actually really like Kevin Padlo. And I think he's going to be a fine baseball player. He's still super young. Kevin Padlo just turned 20 this year.
He's 11 years old.
Basically. And he's got kind of like that little kid smile. Like when you look at his headshot, it's just like a smile where he shows a lot of his teeth. Like, I don't think they're like, smile, Kevin. He's just like, people smile by showing their teeth. I'm just going to do that. The thing with Kevin Padlo is people acted like they traded away the next Nolan Arenado in order to acquire Herman Marquez and Jake McGee. And this deal became a convenient punching bag when Jake McGee really was not that good. But the Rockies, to make this deal, wanted Germán Márquez. It wasn't a deal for Jake McGee. Jake McGee, I think, was certainly a big component of it. I don't think it was, okay, we'll take on Jake McGee as long as we get this kid, Germán Márquez.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And Jake McGee fits the bill of what they're trying to build in the bullpen. A guy who is fastball reliant, has generally had pretty good command and pretty good results in his career. This year, it wasn't there for Jake McGee. Does that mean it's not going to be there in 2017 and beyond? No, absolutely not. But Kevin Padlo, I like Kevin Padlo as a prospect. I like him as a player, but he's not, they didn't trade away Brooks Robinson. And the way people reacted to this deal, just in order to take their opportunity to dump all over Jeff Breidich and dump all over Zach Wilson and dump all over the Rockies, was just, it was the most Rockies reaction thing ever. Kevin Padlo this year was somehow, by the way, named a postseason all-star for the Bowling Green Hot Rods in the Midwest League, which I really don't get, because he slashed 229, 358, 413, a 771 OPS, which isn't terrible. He was markedly better in the second half. He batted 248 compared to 210 in the first half, but the OPS was virtually identical, 772 versus 770. I like Kevin Padlo. I have nothing against Kevin Padlo. So when we make jokes about Kevin Padlo on Twitter, we're not making jokes about him. We're making jokes about all the morons that were like, oh, yeah, but look at this Padlo kid they gave up and ruining everything in my life.
Yes.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Kevin Padlo's fine. But Germán Márquez is the point. He is the linchpin of this deal, and yesterday really showed why. As Anthony noted, Eastern League Pitcher of the Year. Strikeout-to-walk ratio was fantastic. His results for AA Hartford were outstanding all season. Then he makes it up to the Major League level and shows he's a guy who really comes with a lot of promise.
Yeah. 10 swings and misses yesterday and 5 innings of work, 82 pitches. I mentioned on Twitter yesterday that the swings and misses are a very, very good thing to see from the pitchers. We've been talking about this all season long for the Rockies.
Yeah.
But John Gray averages about 12.5 swings and misses per game. So for Germán Márquez to get into the John Gray pantheon a little bit, that's a very good sign in his first start. He did not seem like the spotlight was too big for him. And considering the dude is 21 years old, that is a very impressive way. He was throwing strikes early in the count, throwing strikes with all of his pitches. His breaking ball looked really, really good. And he'll make at least 2 more starts throughout the rest of the year in the final, you know, 10, 11 games or whatever we have left in the 2016 season, because he is taking the spot of one Jorge De La Rosa. De La Rosa made his final start, apparently, as a Colorado Rocky the other night. And, it was a lot. It was really a surprising reaction for me of all the people who were pouring out tributes on Twitter. I was kind of surprised by that. Were you?
Yeah, I was too. Because, you know, De La Rosa has become kind of a convenient punching bag as well over the last couple of seasons when he's struggled. But our good pal Connor Farrell has an outstanding piece on Purple Row about the immediate retrospective on Jorge De La Rosa's career. And it really hits the nail on the head with this paragraph. Second paragraph of the story, Connor says, quote, De La Rosa was never a star. He was never the guy you tell your friends about when they ask about the Rockies. He was never the draw when you turned on the game, but he never had to be. He was never supposed to be. And that is Jorge De La Rosa. And you need those guys in a rotation. You know, if you're a team that wants to contend, you need them as your 3-4-5 starter. For the Rockies, Jorge De La Rosa was the one for the majority of his career. But that was De La Rosa. Did he have sexy stuff? No, he wasn't throwing 97. He wasn't blowing people away, but he was effective and was the most effective pitcher in Rockies history. And yeah, but I think over the last couple of seasons when he has struggled, it's definitely been, people have been like, man, how much longer do we have to deal with bad Jorge De La Rosa?
Well, let's talk about that for a second. He, by kind of a process of elimination, is the best pitcher in Rockies history. He was there long enough. He made 209 appearances, 200 of them being starts. His 200th start was the one on Tuesday. So all the counting numbers, he pretty much owns them all. Career ERA with the Rockies, a 4.35. The record is 86-61, and herein lies the issue that I think a lot of people have with Jorge De La Rosa. Is he somewhat of an average pitcher? Yeah, I think that's about right. But
yeah,
the one stat that really jumps out about Jorge De La Rosa, especially really given his numbers, is that win-loss record. And obviously a win-loss record for a pitcher has been marginalized in recent years for good reason. It's not very much a good barometer of a pitcher's real and actual worth. But he was 86-61 as a Rocky starter, including 59-20, I believe, in his career at Coors Field. which is, or 53-20, excuse me, 53-20 career at Coors Field, which is a stupid number because that's almost impossible. You would imagine that it's very difficult to do that. The ERA still at Coors Field, though, right around his career average with the Rockies, a 4.31. But the difference was,
which is pretty damn good for pitching.
It's pretty
your
damn good, of course it is. But everybody thought, like, oh well, you know, he figured out how to pitch at Coors Field. Well, sure.
Yeah, kinda.
But that's the thing. I don't really understand why that's the one number that comes out, because that number is ridiculous. Because that win percentage at Coors Field is the best of any active pitcher at their home park in baseball right now. It's better than Clayton Kershaw at Dodger Stadium, or the Madison Bumgarner at AT&T Park. That win-loss percentage is better than any other pitcher at their home park right now and active in baseball. It's one of the top 10 in the history of baseball in terms of pitchers who have made at least 100 starts in any certain ballpark. So you would not expect that from anything you get when you talk about Jorge De La Rosa. But that's why I think his legacy is a little bit complicated, because it was really just the win-loss record, which is kind of weird because there's a lot of different things that go into a pitcher earning a victory or a team getting a win or whatever.
Right.
But when the Rockies gave De La Rosa 4 runs or more of support, he was 43-1 at Coors Field.
Yeah. Yeah.
43-1.
That,
like,
that is pretty damn impressive.
Win-loss records don't mean much, but when you get to a certain extent and the numbers are so
right
in one direction,
then they
say
something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a one-season wonder where he was 11-2 at Coors Field 1 year and then, you know, 2-11 the next year. This is since 2008 that he's been with the Rockies, that he's been doing this at Coors Field. So that's why I'm not sad to see Jorge De La Rosa go, because I think his time in Denver has run its course. And that's not a bad thing. That's a thing that happens to everybody. Jorge De La Rosa is, what, 35 years old?
Yeah.
I mean, his contract's up. They've, you know, I think they've done their due with Jorge De La Rosa. They should have traded him 5 or 6 times throughout his Rockies career, but they didn't. I think I'm definitely ready for the Jorge De La Rosa era to end. And I was really, really surprised at, like, the tearful tributes that were going on Twitter the other night. Not that I don't like Jorge De La Rosa, but I think it's okay for him to be gone at this point.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And, you know, I think that it is simultaneously okay to look back on what he did, look back at the fact that for a long time, the Rockies really had nobody who was successful, and he was successful through whatever means and whatever measure. You know, he was successful, especially compared with most of his contemporaries in the Rockies rotation. I think what really stands out to people too, Jorge De La Rosa has been a constant here for a very long time. De La Rosa made his Rockies debut in 2008. I would imagine there aren't that many members of the front office that have been here since 2008.
Yeah.
And so it's, which is a joke, obviously, because the Rockies never fire anyone. But, you know, I mean, he's been around for 9 years. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can't imagine there are many, if any, longer tenured members of the Rockies pitching staff through franchise history. Because when you look at the other guys who've stuck around for a long time, I think it just felt like a long time. Aaron Cook, Jeff Francis, Armando Reynoso, Pedro Ostacio, the guys who had felt like, oh man, those guys are around forever. I think they're probably around 4 or 5 years, maybe.
The only other guy who had more appearances and starts as a starter, Aaron Cook.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And so that is what really sticks out about Jorge De La Rosa, is he has been a constant for the Rockies. And you kind of felt like he was your guy forever. You know, he's never posted with the exception of 2012, which he made 3 appearances, he's never posted a pitcher record, hashtag pitcher wins, under 500 until this season. He's 8-9. But it just, you know, there are a lot of things about him that you look back on and you like, because – yeah, when everybody else was sucking, he kind of proved to you that it was possible to be effective. I also think there is I'm not going to do this in a way that, you know, I don't want to dump on Jorge De La Rosa in the last stages of his Rockies career, but I also think people are seeing it somewhat through rose-colored glasses. I mean, the conversation on Twitter yesterday with a lot of people who we love, but the conversation of should the Rockies retire his number, No, come on.
Guys, hey,
you're going to set that bar? Larry Walker doesn't even have his number retired by the Rockies. He won an MVP here. He was arguably the greatest player in franchise history if he could have stayed healthy. I mean, Todd Helton, yes, longevity, the fact that he only played his career here, sure. But you're going to retire a number for a guy who's got a career ERA of 4.35?
You didn't retire it for Gary Bennett?
Come on.
You didn't retire it for Scott Service when they were number 29?
Yeah, jerks.
Ron Valone?
The hell? No, but I just, you know,
no,
Jorge De La Rosa had a nice career, was a guy who I think Rockies fans really latched onto with good reason for a very long time. He's not an all-time great. And I don't mean that in the sense of the Rockies have a whole lot of players throughout franchise history who have been better. I just don't think you can look at anyone who's ever pitched for the Rockies and say, yeah, this is an all-time. If you were going to carve the Mount Rushmore of Rockies luminaries, Jorge De La Rosa would not be on it.
Well, they did
so should
that
he have...
in 2009, right?
Yeah, that
the Rockies
that,
Rushmore, and it was...
Right, that MLB
promo. It was Cargo, Tulo, Helton, and Ubaldo.
Yeah.
So...
which, you know, much different time in 2009. Yeah. With where the franchise was, but I just don't think that the Rockies have had anybody that you could look at as a, if you were going to rank, you know, the top 10 most valuable Rockies in franchise history through your perception of them, there aren't going to be a whole lot of pitchers on that list. And yeah, De La Rosa would be near the front of the line, but I don't know. I think we're,
it's all relative, guys.
Yeah. We're overselling it a little bit. So a hell of an impressive career from Jorge De La Rosa in a lot of respects, but as Connor Farrell said in his column, in his farewell to Jorge De La Rosa, this is what the Rockies are doing now. They are building, as Connor put it, a, quote, new, younger, higher-powered rotation, and Jorge doesn't fit anymore. And that is true. That's the case. So, yeah, a bummer to see him go, but this is progress for the Rockies. This is the next chapter for them.
I definitely agree. It's really good that it's finally happening, but I'm happy to see what they can do next year without having to deal with Jorge De La Rosa.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Grant Brisby is very excited not to watch Jorge De La Rosa pitch anymore because he is he's very unhappy with his pace of play whenever Jorge De La Rosa is pitching against the Giants.
The Rockies are going to have – I mean, next year is going to be the first time that you go into a season – and I think you're excited about all five rotation members just in the fact that with many of them, and Tyler Chatwood and Chad Bettis don't really fit this mold, but the three spots that will be filled around those guys, who as of right now look like it'll be John Gray for sure, Tyler Anderson you would think for sure, but at this stage you have Jeff Hoffman and I guess Herman Marquez battling it out for the five spot. You've got your top pitching prospect and one of your top pitching prospects now battling it out for the fifth spot in the rotation. The Rockies have never really had that before. And it's not like this is, you know, 2003 where it's, okay, your top pitching prospects are Chin-Hui Sao and some guy you probably signed off of a street out of a barbecue restaurant or something. I mean, these are legit good prospects.
Brian Bohannon?
A lot of barbecue restaurants for him. A lot of them. Yeah. But, you know, so you go into 2017 and you think, man, I mean, this is a rotation that has the potential to be very, very good because you're not looking at somebody and saying, okay, we know what we've got out of that guy. We're going to have some really rough stretches from him at times this year. You know, it's just this is a new era. It's different.
Yeah, right now Jeff Hoffman has not looked like he is exactly ready for the big leagues. Just looking to get a little bit more movement on his pitches. He's kind of coming in flat a little bit right now, but he's got a whole offseason to figure that out. And Herman Marquez, if it's going to be that spring training position battle – for the five spot, man, okay.
And again, Jeff Hoffman, the end of his first full professional season, came
after
back
TJ.
From Tommy John surgery last year, didn't get started until over a month into the season. So, you know, it's possible that he's wearing down because we saw Craig Goldstein, our good pal from Baseball Prospectus, has written Jeff Hoffman many times, and when Jeff Hoffman is good, when he's on, he's as good as any pitching prospect in the minors, save maybe a handful.
Right.
You know, the Lucas Giolitos, formerly Julio Urias, who's now no longer technically a prospect. He's exhausted his prospect status. But those guys are the only ones who are maybe a half step above, a little bit of a cut above Jeff Hoffman. So I think he's going to be fine. You're not seeing Jeff Hoffman in the stretch that, he would be his most effective. The end of a season, the amount of innings that he's logged, he's going to be different at the start of 2017 than he is at the end of 2016.
Right.
But, man, Marquez was exciting yesterday.
Yes, he was. And that's what we're going to see a lot of talk this offseason about, how the Rockies are the sleeper new team to come out and show some people what for in the 2017 campaign, just like the Padres were in before 2015, the D-backs were before 2016.
Yeah, it's worked out well for both of those teams,
but,
too. So,
you know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen in the offseason, but if that is the case, it will be because of very, very different reasons. The Padres went out and traded for everybody, every crappy player they could possibly have imagined. The D-backs went and signed / traded for every crappy player they could possibly have imagined. So the Rockies,
I'm just excited for the Rockies.
Be the one team who will have done it, through their own system.
I'm excited for them to sign James Shields. I know he's under contract until 2019.
Shame Shields.
I'm still excited for them to sign him because that has worked out perfectly.
Really well. Like, yeah. Super well.
Oh, actually, apparently he can opt out of his contract and get $16 million paid to him by the San Diego Padres following this season if he so chooses.
God, I hope he does.
Yeah, me too. Why would you not?
Ugh.
Why would you not?
Ugh.
So that's the next step. The next chapter for the Colorado Rockies is saying goodbye to Jorge De La Rosa. It's also very weird that Jorge De La Rosa makes his last start on September 20th, and the Rockies still have 10 days of games left, but that's just it. that was a little weird.
Yeah, I mean.
But makes sense.
They just want to get Marquez 3 starts, and I appreciate them making that change at this time. You know, they were just officially eliminated from the playoffs, at least from the division race, unfortunately. You know, but nobody saw that coming, but. Really, really snuck up on us there.
Yeah, yeah. Remember when the Rockies could have traded Jorge De La Rosa at the end?
Like a lot of times.
At the end of 2013 and.
And the trade deadline of 2014 and 2015 and 2016.
Yeah. Not the best management of Jorge De La Rosa's last stretch here to turn him into something super valuable. But hey, you know. Them's the breaks, as they say.
Nobody says that.
People say that.
I think
people
so.
Say that.
Nah.
Let's move on. Let's keep it at the major league level. And we'll talk about a conversation that you had, speaking of name dropping, at the Fox Sports 1 offices the other day.
Yeah.
Go.
So I work with Frank Thomas quite a bit, who, congratulations to Frank Thomas, just had his 6th child, by the way. He's got a starting
five and a sub.
Yeah.
He's got a starting
five and a sub now.
That's good. In case one of them fouls out, he's covered.
Yeah, exactly. Considering the size of some of these kids, they're going to be fouling out just accidentally.
Hack a Thomas.
Yeah, exactly.
Hack a hurt.
Yeah. So we've
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Ooh. So we've had a lot of discussions, obviously, AL MVP race, NL MVP race, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, whatever. All these races are coming down, and they make for good television fodder, obviously. And the AL MVP race is kind of fascinating. There's a lot of guys it could go to. Mookie Betts, Josh Donaldson, Jose Altuve, Manny Machado. They're all in the mix, of course. Mike Trout's name keeps getting thrown in there as well, because Mike Trout's still one of the best players in all of baseball, having one of his better seasons, oddly enough. He's stealing bases again. He's going to hit 30 home runs, probably going to drive in 100, score 100, leading league in OBP, whatever. And Frank Thomas can't quite seem to wrap his head around the fact that Mike Trout is still mentioned in these talks. Now, Frank Thomas only won 2 MVP awards in his career, which is kind of surprising because he had such a long, distinguished career. He's a Hall of Famer. But he won 2 in 93 and 94, or 92, 93, back-to-back years. And he was kind of screwed over a lot of times because his team wasn't very good some of those years. It was 93, 94. I was right the first time. Okay. And so he looks at it now and he says that, I was hurt because my team's, no pun intended, because my team's weren't necessarily going to make the playoffs that year, and I think the MVP should come from a team who's in the playoffs, which is a very fine opinion to have. That's an opinion that a lot of people share, as well as Frank Thomas. But Ken Rosenthal yesterday wrote a nice article about why Mike Trout should be the MVP, and even the Vegas oddsmakers are making Mike Trout one of the favorites right now to win it in the American League. And so Frank actually had a good point about this, because I'm kind of the one in that meeting as the researcher. Whenever somebody says something in the meeting, we're talking about certain topics, I'm the one who has to fact check it to make sure that it's correct, that we don't say something that's totally wrong on air. So when Frank Thomas says something like, you know, Mike Trout's not even having that good of a season, I have to, you know, push up my fake glasses that I don't have and go, well, actually,
actually,
Mike Trout's having a really fine season. So that's kind of my job. But after he read Ken Rosenthal's article yesterday about saying Mike Trout should be the MVP, Frank said, well, next time you see Ken Rosenthal, why don't you tell him that he should make his next article about why Nolan Arenado shouldn't be collecting his second consecutive NL MVP award.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. So Nolan Arenado, he led the NL in home runs this year, tied with Bryce Harper, led in RBI this year, leading in home runs, leading in RBI again this year. Obviously, the counting stats aren't exactly the most important all the time. But for a guy like Frank Thomas, who led the league a lot in RBI and home runs and was always up there and that kind of stuff, he likes that. Or at least he was always up in the top five in RBI and home runs, blah, blah, blah. He likes those kind of numbers. And so he really likes Nolan Arenado. But he makes him a comparison to Mike Trout because they're elite power hitters. They drive in a lot of runs. They were elite defenders at their positions. And I thought it was kind of a fascinating conversation about, you know, yes, I'm saying Mike Trout should be winning the MVP this year, even though his team sucks. But if that's the case, why shouldn't Nolan Arenado be in that conversation for the National League?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think the definition of most valuable player has been, for the entire lifetime of that award, nobody's ever really been able to settle on what that means.
No.
Because do you give it to the best player on the best team? Is it like the Heisman? Or do you give it to somebody who is really good, but maybe they're on a terrible team? You know, back in the late 90s, the Rangers were running out an MVP every year on teams that were really not that good. You know, whether it was Pudge Rodriguez or Juan Gonzalez. And you know, then later on, Alex Rodriguez was the same way. In 2003, A-Rod wins an MVP on a Rangers team that, if I recall correctly, was not super great. A-Rod that year slashed .298/.300 with 47 homers, but they went 71-91 and finished in last place in the AL West. So that's the age-old debate. Do you give it to the best player in baseball, or do you give it to the guy who has been the most valuable player in baseball? That's what it always comes down to. To me, if it was intended to be given to the best player in baseball on a yearly basis, it should be the most outstanding player award, not the most valuable player award. Thankfully, we now have metrics to determine how valuable players are.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, that being said, I don't think that you should just award – it shouldn't just be the WAR award.
No,
because
that is a terrible idea.
Because that stat has its own shortcomings. But it definitely gives us a much better barometer by which we can measure the value of players to their teams than we had 20 years ago. Again, though, if that is the conversation, for example – what metric do you go by? Do you go by the Baseball Reference wins above replacement? Do you go by Fangraphs wins above replacement? There was a really good rant, and I can't remember who it was from, but the other day our good pal Nick Stellini retweeted a conversation about just how WAR can kind of screw players over in their evaluations, and the comparison was between Mike Trout and Mookie Betts. According to Baseball Reference, Mike Trout leads baseball and wins above replacement at 10.1 this season. Mookie Betts is second at 9 even. But Mookie Betts is benefiting massively from the fact that he's moved to a corner outfield position. So his defensive metrics look far greater.
He's leading the defensive run save, which again is another statistic that has a lot of foibles.
Right.
In it.
But playing right field in Boston, where the fence is 200 feet away, is a much easier task than playing center field in Anaheim, where Mike Trout has to be Mike Trout. So there are a lot of shortcomings with all of those stats because of factors like that. But that being said, Nolan has to be in the conversation if you do go by somebody who is the biggest contributor to his team's success. Now, Nolan this year is 15th overall in wins above replacement on the Fangraphs side of things at 5.1. But what we've talked about is Nolan's offensive metrics don't translate in WAR the way that a lot of other players do.
And Fangraphs especially hasn't liked Nolan a lot.
Right.
For whatever reason, for one reason or another.
So to me, the conversation should be, how valuable is this player to his team's success? So if the Rockies without Nolan are a 65-win team, and with Nolan they're winning 76 to 78 games this year, that's an extraordinarily valuable player. Is he on a good team? No, he's not on a good team. Without Mike Trout, if the Angels are going to lose 100 games, Mike Trout is the most valuable player in baseball. I don't see it as, okay, well, this guy is great and this team is great. You know, Chris Bryant is just crushing baseballs. Yeah, Chris Bryant is very likely going to be your National League MVP winner.
Yeah.
But look at the lineup that he's hitting in. Look at what he's doing on that team. Don't you think it's more impressive what somebody like Brian Dozier has been able to do with the Minnesota Twins this year than what Chris Bryant's been able to do with the Chicago Cubs? Because, first of all, Brian Dozier has no business at all doing what he's doing. But compared to what Chris Bryant is able to do, I think it's more impressive because Brian Dozier doesn't have Anthony Rizzo in his lineup. He doesn't have Dexter Fowler in his lineup, or, well, I'm not going to say Addison Russell, but he has offensive performers around him, does Chris Bryant, that elevate his game a little bit as well. It's just such a difficult definition to nail down because it's never really been explicitly laid out as to what the voting criteria should be. It's just kind of, all right, vote for who you think should be the winner of this award. And as we know, the baseball writers, they're never weird about the way they vote for awards.
What about Trevor Story this year? The Rockies were 50-44 with Trevor Story this year. They are 23-35 without him.
Yeah. So how can you not make the argument that he is valuable? It's just such a the definition, the way that you delineate what that word means, it depends on what the definition of is.
No, seriously.
That's really it. That's
Bryce
really
Harper
it.
Didn't
it is.
Make, didn't lead the Nationals to the playoffs last year. But he won the MVP.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think Nolan should be in the conversation. Do I think Nolan should win the NL MVP award this year? Probably not.
Yeah.
But do I think that he should be a top three, top five finisher? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do I think he will be? Absolutely not. Because
top five? I think he can finish top five.
He could squeak in top five. But you know it'll be something where Daniel Murphy will finish second because, oh, look at how he hit this year. His average was terrific.
Well, Dale Murphy hasn't played the last week.
Yeah, true.
So
that's a topic that we didn't even lay out in our little outline of the show today, but I think I think it's time for us to talk about DJ.
Yeah.
Because holy crap, is DJ good.
By the way, one coda on that. Last year, Nolan led the National League in home runs and RBI, finished eighth in the MVP voting, winning a Silver Slugger as an All-Star and a Gold Glove. He finished eighth in NL MVP voting.
Makes sense. Nolan, this season, last night, hit his 39th homer. He is leading the National League in both RBIs and home runs once again. 39 homers and 128 RBIs. He's actually leading all of baseball in RBIs. He's a generational talent, man. The other day when Von Miller got the strip sack to win that game for the Broncos, I tweeted out, there are so many fun athletes to watch in this town right now. And it's true. Every team in this town right now has somebody, you know, even though they were not good last year, when Nathan McKinnon steps on the ice for the Avalanche,
you see
kind
that
of take,
goal he had last night for
America?
Oh, my God.
You take notice because it's like, man, this is somebody that I want to watch. I don't care who he plays for. I don't care what type of game it is.
Like
that's
Nikola
how Nolan
Jokic.
Is. Yeah. Right, exactly. Jokic, that's how Jokic is. That's how Von Miller is. That's how Nolan is. This town has a lot of fun guys to watch right now, and it hasn't always been that way. But Nolan should be in the conversation. I mean, what's your take? To me, what it comes down to is they're the Rockies. It's a team that doesn't have any hype. When you think about the Rockies, if you're a writer who's based in New York, you think that team sucks, and they've always sucked, and I'm not going to pay attention to them. Yeah, Nolan Arenado seems to be good, but that's kind of my take on it. It goes back to the classic, nobody really understands just how good this guy is because they don't watch him play regularly. But at the same time, I think even if they did, I don't think he's in the conversation to win that award just because of the quality of his team.
But what I've definitely noticed this year about working with FS1, with a lot of national guys that I do, I even got to meet Dick Enberg this week, which was really cool.
Ah, man!
I know!
I love him.
And Mark Paul Gosselaar.
By the way, just a real really quick cool. aside, yeah. I went to John Gray's start on Saturday, in which he just flat out dominated,
right.
which was the conclusion
best
of like the best day that I've had in like 5 years. Like, woke up that morning, had a good breakfast. The new lady and I went to like this little outdoor fest at the sculpture park down by DCPA where there were just like vendors and like people with food.
Did you have to use your AK?
I don't know what that means.
Did you see the Goodyear blimp?
No.
God, you're the worst. You're going to get this. Oh, go on.
Anyway. then Nebraska beats Oregon. Phenomenal day. Then I go watch John Gray shove. And then as I'm leaving the ballpark that night, standing on the corner of 20th and Arapahoe, and all of a sudden these two well-dressed gentlemen in suits dragging along roller briefcases behind them just blow by us on the sidewalk, and I said, hey, wait a minute, that's Mark Grant and Dick Enberg. And they were just walking back to the team hotel just through this mass of fans and Lodo. They were just like, eh, we don't want to wait for the bus. And the funniest thing was Mudcat, who is our favorite, Anthony and I both love Mark Grant. He's just like leaving Dick Enberg in the dust. Like Dick Enberg is, how old is Dick Enberg? He's got to be like 83,
81,
something like that.
I believe. Yeah, 81, 82, something like that.
Yeah, 81 years old. And Mark Grant, former major leaguer, is just like steaming it up the sidewalk on 20th to get back to the Ritz where they stay, the visiting team stay when they come to play the Rockies. And Dick Enberg's like struggling to keep up. I wanted to be like, Mudcat, he's super old, man. Like maybe slow it down a little
bit.
Man. But anyway, you got to meet Dick Enberg, etc. Yeah,
so anyway, so I get to meet a lot of players and national personalities and whatever. And this was the first year that I've really realized, and they all started talking about Nolan Arenado being in the conversation among the best players in baseball. For whatever reason, it clicked this year where everybody realized that, oh, this kid's been doing it for this long. Oh, he only just turned 25. Like, okay, we can start putting him up in this level of elite talents in all of baseball. And this is the first year that it was consistent. Every single time we would see a Nolan Arenado highlight, they go, oh my God, that kid is so good, blah, blah, blah. It helped last year when he hit more home runs on the road than he did at Coors Field. This year he's 24 at home, 15 on the road. The number is still at home or better, but on the road still slashing 276, 338, 495, and 832 OPS, which is totally fine. So that was my thing. This is the first year that I think other people around the country realized that Nolan Arenado is here to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a fluke.
Right.
I think people worried about that for a while.
Yeah, he is increased.
Is this Arenado kid a Coors creation?
Everything this year. Depending on what he is the last few weeks, he's got three home runs to tie his mark from last year. He's going to probably pass his RBI total from last year. The average is better. The OBP is better. Slugging is about the same as last year. The OPS is much better than last year. He's cut down on his strikeouts. He's increased his walk rate. He's becoming even more of an elite player, which is hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, there is an argument to be made that we haven't even seen the best of Nolan Arenado yet.
Yes.
Because baseball players, you know, you'll reach your physical peak toward the mid to back end of your 20s. He just turned 25 in April.
Yes.
So there's an argument that we have not even seen this yet, the absolute best from Nolan. And that is so sexy.
Cool.
So sexy.
Kick ass? Yeah,
yeah.
That's kick ass.
So yeah, keep an eye on that because, there could be even better days ahead from Nolan. But yeah, I don't think, you know, he's not going to get voted the MVP. He should be a top five finisher, but you know, like Anthony said last year, he had a very similar season. He still finished eighth in the MVP voting. So
yeah.
The Rockies are going to need to make some noise. They're going to need to make some noise for consistent years. It can't be a fluky 2007 run. It can't be one solid year like 2009 followed up by a non-postseason year in 2010. If you're the Rockies, in order to get yourselves in the conversation, you need to be in the playoffs regularly, and they've never done that.
Yeah.
They've never done it. We had somebody ask us a couple months ago, will the Coors thing ever go away if the Rockies have a good – if John Gray continues to be John Gray, will the Coors thing ever go away? Will Rockies pitchers ever be viewed the way that other pitchers are viewed? And to me, you have to do that for 5 to 10 straight years.
I mean,
because national media members aren't going to take a 2-3-year stretch and say, okay, yeah, it looks like they figured out Coors Field.
No, and in 2010, Ubaldo had to put up utterly stupid numbers that you couldn't possibly ignore to get
right.
people to pay attention to what he was doing in that first half.
Yeah. 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 So it's the sad news about that is the Rockies have never done it. The good news about that is the Rockies appear to be on the verge of opening up a handful of years where it looks like they're going to be good. But we still have to couch it with like a, the appear to be.
Yeah.
They seem to be on the verge. They seem to have a lot of talent coming up, because when you're a Rockies fan, you can't let happiness in without a full FBI background check on it.
Correct.
So anyway, let's move on. I know Anthony's got to leave here in 10 minutes or so. So let's move on to another topic that affects the Colorado Rockies organization. This is minor league affiliation change time.
Yes.
And across the landscape of minor league baseball, we have had a handful of teams already change. And you will notice that if you log on to ModestoNuts.com, the logo now in the top right corner says Class A Advanced Affiliate of the Seattle Mariners, and here is the release. Quote, the Modesto Nuts Professional Baseball Club and the Seattle Mariners.
The Modesto
Nuts. That's the saddest part about losing them. I don't get to do that regularly. Might just have to work it in anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to tee you up for it. Ready? Ready?
Yeah.
The Modesto Nuts. Professional Baseball Club and the Seattle Mariners have signed a 4-year player development contract effective October 1st, 2016. In addition to the 4-year PDC, the Mariners will also become the majority owner of the franchise, thus ensuring a long-term relationship between the Nuts and Mariners. Quote, the Mariners are committed to a strong minor league system, said Mariners Director of Player Development Andy McKay, who, let's pause for a second and recall, Andy McKay was a longtime Rockies front office executive before moving on to be the Mariners Director of Player Development ahead of the 2016 season. Quote, that commitment, coupled with our desire to remain in the California League and the great opportunity to be affiliated with the Nuts and the city and fans of Modesto, has led us to this partnership. We are looking forward to many, many years of success here in Modesto. So, the Rockies, who have been the parent club of the Modesto Nuts since the 2005 season. Now, no more. No more. The Rockies move on, and as of right now, have no Class A Advanced affiliate relationship listed for 2017. Now, Anthony and I have discussed this at length in seasons past. I believe that the Rockies have, for at least the last few seasons, have eyed the Carolina League because of its proximity over the last 2 years to both their full-season Class A affiliate, which is one step below this level in Advanced A, that's the Asheville Tourists.
Asheville, yes.
And now the AA Hartford Yard Goats, who were last year the New Britain Rock Cats, who are also located out east. The Hartford Yard Goats. So, it makes a whole lot of sense for the Rockies to have three affiliates all in the next steps on the ladder in one group out east. Because what you had before were Rockies players going from, if they traveled the whole road, Grand Junction to Boise, not that bad, but then Boise to Asheville, Idaho to North Carolina, Asheville to Modesto, East Coast, all the way to the West Coast, Modesto to Hartford, all the way back to the East Coast, and Hartford to Albuquerque, basically all the way back to the West Coast.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's a lot of travel. There are a handful of teams that have systems like that. The San Francisco Giants come to mind. The Giants go, Giants prospects go from in the South Atlantic League, the same level as Asheville. They are in Augusta, Georgia there. That's in low A. High A's in San Jose. Double A's in Richmond, Virginia. And Triple A now is in Sacramento. So it's kind of – that's very taxing on prospects. Not only is it very taxing on prospects, it's also taxing on coordinators, player development executives, people who go to travel to see these teams. You can't – when you have all of your teams in close proximity, the fluidity that results from that is a much better – working situation. Now, that being said, do we know that the Rockies are going to Carolina? No. We've had indications that the Rockies are going to Carolina, the home of the Carolina Mudcats, formerly a Double-A team. The Rockies were actually the parent club of the Mudcats when they were in Double-A from 1999 to 2002. Carolina switched to be a High-A team back in 2012. My money is on Carolina. The only other team right now that appears to be without a parent is the Lancaster Jethawks, who are also in the California League.
Yeah,
but that is like Coors on steroids. That's when the games get wacky in Lancaster, they end up like 23-19. That's not an exaggeration. There was a game, it was either earlier this year or last year, where a team scored, I think, 32 runs at a game in Lancaster.
Yeah, the game I went to in Lancaster.
Yeah, you went to a game in Lancaster.
It ended like 6-2 in like 2 hours and 30 minutes. I was like, what the hell? I want my money back.
Yeah, no, that's not fun. You really got robbed.
Yeah, I know.
You got screwed out of a good
Lancaster.
Yeah,
and I met Bob DeBro there that day, too. So
God, you really got screwed.
Yeah. It was a rough day for me.
Ugh. Speaking of Bobby DeMuro, I mean, Bobby's had his long form story on Bakersfield, which is definitely worth a read, which you can go find. But Bakersfield was one of the dominoes that had to fall in this scenario. Bakersfield was the former high A affiliate of the Mariners. The Mariners, sensing the contraction from the California League and the expansion of the Carolina League, they swooped in to purchase Modesto. And keep themselves in the California League. So Bakersfield was left without a parent club, really, in all effect. And High Desert, the other team contracted, had a parent club in the Texas Rangers that was very, very much invested in getting out of the California League. And they are the owners of the new franchise in Kinston, North Carolina. So a lot of these things are interdependent and had to fall together. But what it means for the Rockies is they will end up either in Carolina or in Lancaster. And we have heard a lot of rumblings that the Rockies want to get into Carolina, which makes a ton of sense. And also prevents your prospects from having to pitch in maybe the most offensive-friendly environment in all of baseball. And a lot of people will say, don't you want them playing in an environment like that to get ready for Coors Field?
Nah.
I think three steps down the ladder, it doesn't take hold nearly as much as what you would think. Because
it'll stunt development. I feel like that down.
Right.
When you closer to Colorado Springs or Albuquerque, wherever the Rockies have had it in the last few years,
right,
closer to big leagues, that you want to have them a little bit used to the altitude, the offense friendly environment. You don't need that all the way through the ladder. Like let's be the last step for them to make.
You already have Grand Junction, which is a tough pitcher's atmosphere. Boise is not the easiest place to pitch.
Asheville to right field instead of
Asheville's offensive ballpark.
It's a 35-foot wall or whatever.
Yeah, I just don't think that the lessons that you learn in high A of like, oh, man, when you've got, you know, runners at second and third and one out of Coors Field, I don't think you're hearkening back on, oh, remember that time we were pitching in High Desert? You know, I don't think that really sticks. Plus, you move on, you go to Hartford. We don't know what the ballpark situation is going to be in Hartford in 2017 as of yet. But if they're in Dunkin' Donuts Park, you don't know how that park plays yet. There's a chance. What if that's the world's greatest pitcher's park? Then the lessons that you learned in Lancaster, if the Rockies landed there, are those null and void because now you're pitching in a good pitcher's park? I think the Rockies are smart to have moved that AAA affiliation to Albuquerque because guys get a taste of pitching at altitude. They get a taste of pitching in a, you know, a nice facility where you are not dealing with some of the challenges that they were dealing with in Colorado Springs. It's an easier transition, I would imagine, from Albuquerque to Coors Field than it was from the Springs to Coors Field. But I don't think, like you said, I don't think you need it all throughout the system. And I think it would stunt development if you had it all throughout the system. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good talk today, guys.
So that's that. Good talk. Good talk. So I guess that's it for this week, right?
Yeah, I mean,
is that it?
Not bad.
We didn't even talk about John Gray. John Gray
and the greatest pitching performance in Rockies.
The single greatest pitching performance in Rockies history. Let's talk about that real quick because I know you got a couple of minutes left. That game was ridiculous.
It was stupid.
He was at 96 pitches, I think, after the eighth inning, and I was thinking to myself, like, are they gonna screw this up and not let him go out there for the ninth?
That would have been a mistake.
Yeah, it would have been. And then he comes out and he takes his own at bat. And I was like, all right, they're going to let him go for this. And 16 strikeouts, breaks the single-game Rockies record, and does so in the ninth inning, finishes the game with a 16th strikeout. Holy smokes.
I mean, the eighth pitcher ever to throw a shutout with 16 strikeouts and no walks.
The eighth pitcher ever.
John Gray and Vince Velasquez both did it this year, oddly enough. The other guys on the list, Max Scherzer, Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens twice, Kerry Wood in his 20-strikeout game, Dwight Gooden, and Louis Tiant.
Oh. And the crazy thing is it happened twice this year. Scherzer's was last year, correct?
Yeah.
And then it hadn't happened since 1998.
Correct.
Prior to that, which is very strange.
And it happened three times in 1998. Kerry Wood's 20-strikeout game, Clemens had an 18, when he was with the Blue Jays, had an 18K no-walk game against the Royals, and then Johnson with the Astros against the Pirates had one of those games too.
Legendary Astro Randy Johnson.
Yeah, exactly.
But
Clemens' other 20-strikeout game is in there, Dwight Gooden in 1984 and Louis Tiant in 1968, the year before that epic year where before they moved the mound and everything, and the pitchers dominated. Bob Gibson threw like a 1.12 ERA at the league.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. But John Gray, that's how good he was on Saturday night.
Yep.
And, you know, it does it against the Padres. Okay, sure. But the Rockies have struggled against the Padres yeah. until this weekend.
Yeah, that's nothing. The Padres have been a thorn in the side of the Rockies all season long.
And they have good offensive performers. Will 1L Myers is a good hitter. You know, I mean, they have guys in that lineup that you have to work
around. He's not good at spelling his own goddamn
name. No, he's not. He's not at all. And he's also not good at answering the demands as to why he is so bad at spelling his name that way.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But John Gray, I mean, he has done everything the Rockies have wanted, could have possibly wanted him to do in order to show the rest of these guys coming up the system that it is possible to be really damn good.
Yeah.
We even tweeted at our pal Tom Lay from Deadspin, who we had on last year to talk about what it's like being a Rockies fan. He's a Denver native, all that kind of stuff. And Tom responded and said, you know, just listen to it again, and you guys were definitely right about John Gray. And this is best case scenario at this stage with what John Gray has been able to do in his first full season.
I agree.
And last time out, you know, I don't think he's going to do it tonight. I don't think he's going to do it again this season. But, man, if there is going to be a lasting image of John Gray to get you excited for 2017, Saturday was it.
I believe so. It was awesome. Very, very awesome.
All right, dude. Leave. Right. Go. We hate you.
You get out of here.
Nobody likes you. Next week, we'll be back for our final regular season edition.
Yeah, think about that.
Of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Then we'll probably take some time off because we hate each other and don't like talking. But no, we'll be back over the off season, all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. All right. Until next week, buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. Get in touch, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com and @purpledinocast on Twitter. And we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy Vin Scully's final weekend of calling Rockies games in Los Angeles. If you can figure out a way to watch it, do it, because it'll be very
worthwhile.
I'm
trying to get to at least one of the games. We'll see. The tickets are very, very expensive.
Yeah,
now, obviously,
I would imagine.
So.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
You're all barking, no bite, you big ol' silly goose.
Geese don't bark.
They
I gotta
do
be a goose and...
When they're off duty.
Off duty. When they're at the bar. They're down at the goose bar. So I said to this guy, I said, ruff,
they're down at the goose saloon. Yeah.